You're now tuned in to the Front Row Hoopcast. Your show for everything Butler basketball.
Season 4, Episode 4 of the Front Row Hoopcast. Your show for everything Butler basketball. If you have not already, please subscribe on iTunes. We're looking for some more ratings. I'm not going to tell you to give us a 5-star rating, but I would greatly appreciate it. I've gotten, you know, if you want to give me a 1-star, that's fine. But the subscribers and the likes are always much appreciated. Marco Tomic, the Hoopcast legend, Hoopcast Tomic himself, is in the building. Tomic, what's going on?
It's great to be back. Butler basketball season's up and coming and hitting us fast. And I can't wait to see what we have in store for us the rest of the season.
Well, let's get into it. We are 2-0, beat a surprisingly scrappy Detroit team. And then Miami of Ohio just got pummeled by us. So the first thing, I have to say it. On my last episode, I was saying, man, I don't know about Joey Brunk. I can't see him playing well this year. He just never showed me anything. Boy, was I wrong on that. Swing and a miss. I'm usually not that far off with predictions, but this one, I was
100% wrong.
Oh, dude. I was seriously, like 100% wrong. I did not think he'd contribute based off his first 2 years, and he's impressed me a ton. 17 points in game one. So the stats on the year, he's averaging 15 points per game, 5 rebounds, shooting 91% from the field. I still can't believe just how effective he's been.
I just want to bring us back into reality a little bit, and let's refocus on Miami of Ohio and Detroit Mercy. You know, it's great to see him get that kind of exposure early, and that's really what I think LaValle is trying to do, is get those jitters out of the way, because he knows how effective it's going to be for him later down the line when he actually has to play, you know, real competition. I mean, at one point towards the end of the second half when we made that big run, I don't think they had a post player in there. The guy guarding him was like 5 inches shorter than him and was giving up like 35 pounds. That's like me posting you up, Ari. And I'm pretty sure that it's going to go about the same way.
It wouldn't go well, no. So, well, that's interesting you say that, because originally I was thinking, is it the competition that, you know, is really affecting it? Which it was. Miami of Ohio couldn't D up anybody. But at the same time, Brunk was the first or second guy off the bench all night. I mean, he averaged close to 20 minutes a game. Yeah. I mean, those weren't pity minutes. Like,
no.
Coach Vail wanted him in, and he wanted him in early. Nate Fowler played a few more minutes, but Brunk was, I mean, he's going to be a big contributor this year, I think.
And you know what he did, too? He brought a lot of that energy.
Yeah.
The team seemed to play different when he was on the court. Like, it was a pretty significant difference, in my opinion. I chatted a little bit with some season ticket holders when I was there during game one of the season, and they were really liking the vibe. I mean, Joey's a Butler guy pretty much through and through. Mm-hmm. He's a fan favorite. People love to like him, you know? And he actually brought up a pretty good point. I really wouldn't mind seeing Joey start. Joey starting brings that energy, the quick couple of minutes where, you know, a quick foul could happen or this or that, and then you bring in trusty, reliable Nate Fowler, and you know what you're going to get out of him. He's a seasoned veteran. He knows how to play a game. He knows how to fill in. I don't know if I'm ready to launch him into the starting role, but I could see that energy change and effect. What do you think, Ari?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because, Tomic, I'm scared for Nate Fowler. I'm scared because there is a genuine love affair between Joey Brunk and the Butler fans. And I've seen Brunk for 2 games. I already love him.
Yeah.
All right? I'm just waiting for a game where Nate Fowler has a bad game and we lose. He is going to get destroyed on Twitter, on the Butler Hoops forums. They are going to eat him alive. The thing about Nate, he's not very flashy. He's subtle. So, and Brunk is very flashy and does a lot of energy, so fans are going to gravitate towards that. So Nate's not going to get a lot of the love, but at the same time, his advanced stats when he's on the court are just ridiculous. Like, we are a better team when he's on the court from a statistical standpoint. So, I mean, I'm just waiting for, you know, Brunk to just, you know, go into the starting lineup and the fans to demand that Nate Fowler get out of the starting lineup. But I don't want people to be so down on Nate. He averaged 8 points and 7 rebounds a game in the first 2 exhibitions, which is good. All right? Again, he's not flashy, but I'm scared. I don't want people to just go for Nate's throat, because I get that Brunk is a fan favorite immediately, but Nate is still a good player. And the one thing with both of these big men, there's going to be depth concerns. If one of them is in foul trouble, or God forbid one of them is injured, that's all we got.
Right.
Bryce Golden, you know, he may redshirt this year. We don't really have another big guy.
I think it's going to be a combination of two. We're going to need to fill by committee. I don't ever see us chopping one off versus the other. We're going to need a lot of the mixture of what we kind of saw, that 20 to 25 minutes from both of them. We're going to need a lot of A lot of production from Nate down there in the post, a lot of that veteran leadership stuff that Joey just doesn't have yet. And maybe he'll get there this year, but facing some of the Big East competition, you're not going to be facing 6'8" kids that look like they should be hooping at the HRC and they wouldn't have even made my intramural team. So it's going to be a little different. I think Nate's going to come on. I'm not worried about Nate at all. And I'm actually really happy that we're giving Joey this early time. Again, you know, Troy Golden, that was a season ticket holder. I talked to a little bit about that starting role. I like using him as that energy burst. Mm-hmm. I don't quite think using Joey as that full-time fill-in or to replace Nate is the best thing for our team.
Well, that's my thing. What other option do you have? This is my concern, is that it's Brunkett Fowler. That is it. What's the alternative? We haven't seen anything from Marquise Hastings yet. I don't know if he can play there.
Yeah.
That's a huge concern defensively as well, as Nate and Joey aren't great defenders. It's going to be really curious to me to see how they do in Big East play, like you mentioned.
We're going to have to go probably play a little bit of small ball.
Yeah.
That's kind of our only option. I mean, we almost already do with Sean playing the forward a little bit. We saw that somewhat last year as well. You know, Keelan's not your traditional forward play either. So I think just kind of a little bit of mix and match of that. The one player that we need to worry about foul trouble is Kamar. You know, Kamar saw a lot of that foul trouble last year, and that's where my worries come into play. If Kamar picks up two quick fouls in the first half, two, and he has to hit the bench early, can this team fill by committee? Can this team step up and fill a role? Who's going to be that guy that takes on that second role? A lot of names are getting tossed out there.
You mentioned Kamar. To me, turnovers are a bigger deal to me than his fouls at this point. Mm-hmm. He's had 10 turnovers in two games. I mean, he's had monster stat lines. I think I have it written down somewhere. He's averaging like 23.5 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. I mean, that's massive, but he's also averaging 5.5 turnovers a game. That is massively, massively concerning. He's going to be the man this year, but like you said, we're going to have to ride his coattails all the way to success.
Yeah, hopefully Aaron Thompson can be a little bit more ball dominant and get us into our offense a little bit more. We were struggling kind of in that zone to get set up and get going. Really weird because it's crazy. This year they seem more calm, and I saw a little bit more the same dysfunction as we saw last year, but I feel like I'm a little bit less worried about it. This point around last year, especially kind of the first couple of games of that PK80 tournament, I was scratching my head thinking if Butler was going to be a bottom feeder in the Big East at the year. Obviously, we turned things around with the big Ohio State win. We turned things around the rest of the year and became a March Madness team. They seem a little bit more calm. Maybe it's because they're realizing it's the opponents we're playing. But I like Aaron Thompson to be a little bit more ball dominant. And where is he coming from with these threes? I mean,
yeah, he's shooting like 66%.
I was excited about it. You got to shoot those shots. But I wasn't expecting it.
That opens up his games. Even if he can shoot like 30% from three, mm-hmm. and shoot one a game or two a game, like that's perfect for him. The dude, Tomic, before the season, if you had told me, hey, you know who's going to be the second guy off the bench is Gerald Gillens Butler, I'd have said, get this man to a freaking sanatorium. You're insane. Gerald Gillens Butler ain't playing this year. Second guy off the bench in both games. He's playing 12 minutes a game. I don't know what to say. I'm shocked.
I don't really know what called for it. Maybe he had a great summer. Maybe he started eating his Wheaties. Obviously, he trimmed down a little bit. But, I mean, I'm glad he's getting the minutes. I also am not seeing anything over the top out of those minutes either, though. He's not really doing anything mm-hmm. with those minutes to continue to get that belief or that play, I feel like. Hopefully, he can round out, and we just need to be a little bit more deeper. Maybe another ball handler, I guess, is what we're going for.
I'm trying to figure out what his game is. Like, is he a guard? Is he a forward? Is he a shooter? Is he a driver? I don't know what his game is. What's his position? What is he doing? He's averaging 1.5 points, 2.5 rebounds a game. He's in there like, I think he's fine. Like, when he's in there, I'm like, okay, like, fine. But he's not bringing anything right now. I'm pleasantly surprised. And my question is he just playing by default right now? We don't really have another guard.
Yeah.
Christian David's a no-show. We'll get to him. I mean, once Jordan Tucker comes back, I can see Gerald Gillens Butler's minutes really taking a hit.
Yeah, he's going to be playing maybe nearly as much as the managers when Tucker gets back. I mean, nothing against the guy. He seems like he's hustling. Uh-huh. He seems like he's working hard. I mean, you see him get back on defense. He committed a couple minor fouls. I mean, he's not doing anything terrible where I'm mm-hmm. like, get this dude off the court. But he's also not doing anything where like, this is our savior. This is exactly what we needed this year either. Christian David, I'm a little hesitant to pull the plug just yet, but I would like to see him get some more minutes. I feel like he gets put in there and like one or two bad things happens and he just gets yanked. As a player, I mean, that's in your head a little bit. You can't just get – you got to get in a flow. Not everybody feels comfortable directly coming off that bench. So when like one or two bad things happens and he just gets pulled, then he's playing nervous. Then he's playing worried and he's never really been able to find his groove. Maybe he's not quite fully up to what we're expecting in the Big East caliber play. But I don't know, just playing nervous, I think, is kind of getting under his skin. I'd like to see him get, you know, 10 straight minutes or not 10, that's kind of a long stretch, but, you know, 5-7 straight minutes where he can get in a flow.
I think the game is going a million miles an hour for him right now. It's a speed adjustment issue. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to someone about this. It took Joey Brunk 3 years to learn to slow the game down. Okay, you can see it visibly now with Brunk. He was a deer in headlights the first 2 years. He has slowed the game down. He's able to just play. Christian David, the game's going too fast for him. He doesn't have confidence in himself. It's one of those things. I was ready to come out and say, like, this dude needs to transfer. Like, he's a lost cause.
You did say that.
I'm going to hold off, okay? I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit. It's one of those things where I think I'm really willing even to take another year, okay? Because once he gets used to the speed of the game, I think he still has potential. The question is, Tomich, is he going to be willing to wait another year of not playing before he decides, I'm not going to sit on the bench all this time. I'm going to go to find a different school.
Yeah, I don't know. He's been a head scratcher, you know. He had a lot of hype kind of coming in, being this athletic wing forward type player, kind of supposed to fill in a scoring type role for us, and we just really haven't seen it from him. Like I said, I'm not ready to pull the plug on him either. Just the fact that there's such a small sample size, and you know, he's finally feeling like it doesn't look like he's going to be using that brace. Looks like his knee's feeling a little bit more comfortable. If he can get that belief in himself and that belief in and to use his a little bit more of his athleticism, hopefully that can just be create a spark. I mean, if he could just come in here and there, add a few minutes, get some points, and then carve out a role for himself next year, that'll get him to stay. If he sees the little to no progress, I'd almost guarantee that he's probably going to look for other schools just to get playing time. I mean, everybody wants to be on the court. Everybody that comes to D1 used to be that guy where they're from, and unfortunately not everybody can be that guy once they make it to this level.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, he came in game one, got burned on two defensive possessions, and that was the last we saw of him. So, I mean, it's short leash right now. It's one of those things like Gerald Gillen's Butler where I think they give him those minutes to say, we believe in your potential. We think you can do something, but right now you're not giving it to us. So it is a wait and see, and at this point, you just got to hope that he's staying. Like you mentioned, you don't want to give up on him. You know who I'm ready to give up on?
Who?
Paul Jorgensen.
Oh, my God.
More
already.
Of the same from him. 75% of his shots are junk-ass shots. He's shooting 35% from the field and 25% from three. Tomich, I don't understand why people love Paul Jorgensen so much. His game is so bad.
Paul has his moments, and as much as it kills me to say, you know, I do think that his production is going to determine somewhat whether we're going to be towards a little bit more towards the high end of the Big East, or if we're going to be towards a little bit more of the bottom end of the East. Big East, because what he brings to the table is that swagger that, you know, Ari rolls his eyes at me, but he brings, you know, the opportunity. He's not afraid to shoot the ball. You're gonna have nights like he just had against, you know, Miami of Ohio and Detroit Mercy, but then you get those nights like he did last year against Villanova. He has the cojones to shoot that types of stuff. Sean McDermott doesn't have the cojones to shoot, to come off the dribble and take some of those shots. Henry Badley doesn't have the balls to take those types of shots. But you know what, Paul, he's a leader, he's a veteran, and he at least is going to take those shots and try to step into that secondary role. I'm really hoping for maybe, you know, Jordan Tucker taking a couple of those shots away, and then we get a little bit more even out scoring. But for this early part of the season, Paul's going to need to start hitting for us to be a successful team in the long run.
That's the argument I hear all the time is Paul Jordan. The three things I hear are, well, Paul tries so hard when he's out there. You got to love the way he plays. And I hear, well, he's better than I expected him to be, and he's got the confidence to take those shots. Listen to me right now. If I was on the court right now, I guarantee you I would try really hard, and I would have the confidence to take those shots. That doesn't mean I have any business taking those shots, okay? We have to realize you can like Paul that he tries hard. You can say, well, he's better than I expected. I expected him to be dog crap, and he's proven himself to be mediocre. That doesn't mean he's good. Why is he playing 32 minutes a night? I don't understand it.
Who else on the roster is going to take those shots? Who else on the, like, not like his out there shots, the ones where
you're scratching. No one should be taking those shots.
But who's going to fill his role for scoring? We don't have anybody. Nobody can fill the role for scoring right now.
You're saying that because his role right now is rebound the ball, dribble down, not make a pass, and shoot an 18-foot jump shot in the first 10 seconds of the shot clock. Nobody needs to take that shot.
It's early. We've seen it happen in last year. We saw the same thing. You know, you got on him this time last year for taking these dumb shots. It evened out. He understood when what a little bit more of a game shot needed to be in the Big East versus now. He had an off night shooting these past couple of nights. I fully expect Paul to have a bounce back game here in 1 to 2 days, and all the Twitter trolls are going to be in your mentions.
Listen, I'm aware that, like, again, Paul ended the last year exactly where I said, shooting under 38% from the field, and in conference play, he was under 30% from the field from three. We have to just look at this from an objective point of view. When he's out there making these dumbass plays, no passing, 18-foot mid-range jump shot, rushing it, that's not good. There are plays where Paul is fantastic, where he doesn't try to create his own shot, where he waits for something, and you can tell as soon as he shoots it, whether it's going in or out.
Yeah.
Okay, and when a shot's created for him, he's a good player. But he's just all over the place, man.
Let me riddle you this, though. You know, now this is what, year two of going on year two of this from Paul, right?
Yeah.
Is it so much Paul, or do you start to blame the coaching staff somewhat? I mean, we've seen the Butler. We've seen Butler way, and we've seen a lot of players come through this program. Not many players play the way Paul Jorgensen has. So does it start to get to the point where you're thinking Laval and the staff need to be in his ear a little bit more, saying like, hey, we do want you to go and get us some buckets and go out there and do things, but let's try and, you know, get the consistency a little bit more, take smarter shots.
Well, this is interesting because I have talked to the coaches about this.
Yeah.
And I said, I cannot stand Paul's shots. And they said, you know, they drive us crazy too. But the thing is, if you ask Paul to sit in the corner and be a catch and shoot player, he can't do it. Like he will not play well like that.
Yeah.
So the way they've accepted this is that you just got to let him go. He's more effective when, you know, it's high risk, high reward with them. They know that they can't just stick him out in the corner and wait for them, which I think is so interesting that he can't play like that.
Yeah.
So they're aware, and it frustrates the hell out of them too. But it's the risk reward thing that they've dealt with, and I get that. I just don't think the risk is way higher than the reward.
Who's more frustrating of a player, Elijah Brown or Paul Jorgensen?
Paul Jorgensen.
Elijah took a lot of those crazy shots too in his
day. But he didn't play 35 minutes a game and have pretty much free range whenever he was out there.
I guess, I mean, I like Paul.
I know
Paul,
you do.
Paul. I was really banking on him being a little bit more consistent this year. And there's plenty of season left. Like I said, if Jordan Tucker can't immediately come on and be a threat for us, it's going to be a long year if Paul's playing the way he is right now.
Tomich, we've talked about this debate many times. I actually want to, before we get into this, I want to read you a text from Brian Weiss. Friend of the show, Brian Weiss. He's been on a couple times talking stats. All right. So I was telling you about this debate where I said, I think Sean McDermott could be a better overall player than Kellen Dunham. And he's texted me, Ari, please don't publish debate on Sean versus Kellen. I'm asking you because podcasts are public, and I would prefer not to have to explain to people that you're not actually an idiot. Okay? Well said, Brian. Now, this is my piece, all right, Tomich, and we can get into this. My piece is that I think by his senior year season, Sean McDermott could be a more valuable player for Butler than Kellen Dunham was. Not overall. Kellen Dunham's the number two scorer all time at Butler. Number three of all time?
Yeah.
One of the greatest of all times. He's going down to that. Sean will never be better than him. I'm just talking about pure best individual season. In one season, I think Sean could have a better single season than Kellen ever had.
Ah, man. I mean, I know Sean does all these little things, and he plays the Butler way. He's the hustler. He's the drive guy. And by no means am I calling Sean McDermott a bad player. He's a great role player for the team. He's just never going to quite, in my opinion, be that star standout. Now, not only did Kellen have some pretty impressive seasons statistically, especially obviously in the offensive end, but I mean, he was the top guy on a scouting report.
Mm-hmm.
He deserved paragraph to them and his shooting on people's scouting reports day in and day out, got the league's best defenders and sometimes even double teamed when he crossed the court. The only way that Sean would have a better season than Kellen is because of the situation around him. Kellen had very difficult situations to deal with, losing Brad Stevens, going into playing in the Atlantic 10, then playing into the Big East with that with the conference change, as well as taking, you know, the asterisk, he who may not be named anymore, as his coach. And so he played with a locker room around him that was toxic. People didn't want to be there. He who may not be named wanted to kick some of those people out of the program and bring in his own people. Kellen just fought through so much adversity and still became such a high skill player, high production player, and one of the best offensive players that have come through Butler.
For sure. Now, here's my argument. In Kellen's best year, I was looking this up, he averaged 16 points a game, 2.5 rebounds, shot 44% from the field, 42% from three. Sean's best year, it's been, you know, only a year, really, 7.5 points per game, 4 rebounds, 51% from the field, 43% from 3. So Kellen pretty much doubled him up on numbers. This is my point, okay?
Yeah.
If Sean could average by his senior year, so I think he could average double digits this year, like 10 points, 5 rebounds, shoot 40% from 3. By his senior year, if he averages 14 points a game, 7 rebounds, and shoots 40% from 3, and plays better defense, that he already is a better athlete than Kellen and a better defender than Kellen and a better rebounder than Kellen. With averages of 14.7 rebounds, I could argue that as an individual player in that individual season, statistically speaking, would have a better season. You were right when you said he would only be better because of the players around him. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge that you are correct in that. But taking that into effect, just pure on-the-court stats, could he not statistically have a better season than Kellen Dunham?
One of the other backfalls was, you know, that 2015-2016 season. You know, Kellen had the biggest shooting slump probably of his career.
Mm-hmm.
When he went 0-21. And I'd probably bet my firstborn saying that would never happen again to Kellen.
Yeah.
You take away those 21 and his 40-something plus, I want to say 42-ish percent, jumps up to 45 or so for
three. Yeah, you can't do that. Like, we have to go with what actually happened.
I'm just saying, Kellen Dunham, he lacked that defense that Sean brings. He lacked that rebounding that he brought. But let me put this out there to you, Oscar Robinson had a triple-double season, and he averaged in points, rebounds, and assists. But Michael Jordan never did that. Was that one statistical season better than any one of Michael Jordan's seasons? Because he was a better rebounder, he was better at passing, and he was better at potentially defense?
No, because Jordan also averaged 35 points a game, and Oscar probably averaged, 10 points fewer. I'm just saying, if Sean averages 1 point or 2 points fewer, but doubles up Kellen's rebounding and plays better defense, just on paper, can you not acknowledge that on paper, that would be better?
On paper, if you, again, like you said, give me the circumstances of it's because of the situational. I mean, I guess I could say on paper, if he does get to that point, my biggest point is if.
Yeah, it's a big if.
There's nothing that's shown me within Sean McDermott's time here so far with Butler that he's going to bump those points up. He is that strictly based catch and shoot person. How many times I wish we had the Klay Thompson stat with how much time he has the ball in his hands and how many dribbles he takes a game.
Oh, it's because
it's under 30
for sure.
He can't create his own shot for the most part from what we've seen. He's a catch and shoot type player, and if God forbid we lose Kamar to something, Sean's not going to fill that role. He can't create his own shot, and he was going to get locked up by a Big East defender. So I just don't see it actually ever panning out to that point.
So let me I'll tie this thing in a bow, all right? If I had to pick a player right now to lead my team, it would be Kellen Dunham by a country mile, even if Sean McDermott does the stats we sang. Just as an overall player of what you're going to bring statistically, if Sean, big if, could average 14-7, that'd be great as a team player, but not as an individual guy who you want leading the team.
Yeah,
I mean that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
If Kellen had to do what Sean is doing right now, Kellen would have looked amazing. If Kellen went to a blue blood school and had to be their catch and shoot guy
in
the corner.
So
if he would have went to a Kentucky or a Duke and was their wing option, that first guy off the bench, his stats would have been tremendous.
That's an interesting topic. I never thought about that. You might be right there.
Yeah, because obviously, I mean, we saw Kellen, like, He did take it to the lane. Did he do it well? I mean, he did it all right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He did it because he had to. Yeah. But that's not his forte, you know, catch and shoot, coming off a screen, coming off an action. That's kind of his bread and butter. So he was forced to do a lot of things that he wasn't necessarily comfortable with. And I think that kind of hindered some of his growth and or potential. I mean, he did have to grow in other ways. But like I said, I think he would have been a stud standout if he was a catch and shoot guy to Blue Blood.
You're probably right. Also, congrats to Kellen Dunham. He was recently married. He's in the NBA. You're in with Washington now, their D-League team, right?
Yeah, the G-League, I believe it's called now.
I haven't seen any of his stats yet. I assume he's shooting plenty of threes now.
I haven't looked into it as much either, but you can best believe he's shooting a lot of threes.
Tomic, we're wrapping this thing up here. First two games of the season, we've kind of mentioned, you know, the lack of guard play, the lack of options is a big issue. What are you looking forward to going off to the season? You know, non-conference play, what are some things you're going to be looking at, some things you're going to be anxious to see?
I would say my number one right now is Aaron Thompson.
Mm.
I think Aaron Thompson could potentially grow into one of my favorite Butler players.
Ooh.
He's a hard-nosed defender. He has a confidence. He had the confidence last year as a freshman. He was lacking that shot, but he has poise. He racks up charges on a credit card like a little girl. The guy just has, he's athletic. He has just a head for the ball. I am very excited to see Kamar and him work together in the Big East. I think they're going to be a really nice defensive combo on guards. The next thing I would have to say is that Joey Brunk growth that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. If Joey Brunk can give us some real good, meaningful minutes, not quite as 17-point outburst that he had, but you know, 6 points here on 70% shooting and some rebounds, that's going to help our team go a long way. The more meaningful minutes we can get from those guys lower on the bench, the better of a team we're going to be. And I know that's a simple concept to lay out, but that's just the truth. We know what we're going to get out of Sean. We know where we're going to have Kamar. We know we're going to have Nate. All these guys we've seen for years, and we know what to expect of them. But those other guys are going to be the flip of the coin and on how this team turns out.
I think that's right on the money. It's like you said with Joey. He's still got 2 years left after this.
Yeah.
All right. There's a name. I don't know if people are going to remember this. He played at Oklahoma a couple years ago. His name was Ryan Spangler. Joey Brunk reminds me a lot of him. I think that's a player who's going to be a good comparison. Google Ryan Spangler from Oklahoma. Tomic, I've had David Woods on the last couple times, and he's... Oh, wait, no. I wanted to tease this. So I hope everyone has a happy Thanksgiving because we're not going to have an episode. The next podcast that we're going to do, very special guest, Butler strength and conditioning coach is going to be joining the podcast. We're going to be talking about the offseason, kind of what they're doing because players, Kamar gained like 25 pounds of muscle.
He looks meaty.
Gerald Butler lost some weight. I kind of want to get him in here. I want to talk about, like, what are you guys doing in there to get your guys in shape? What's different compared to how Butler lifted and did things in the past? Really cool. I'm really looking forward to that.
It's like Butler came in from the first half of Space Jam versus Monstars, and this guy brought in
Michael
Seagrass
Secret Stubb.
Oh,
yes!
My God. Because I don't know what happened to the team. They look way different. They look ready to go, and I'm excited about it.
I'm definitely pumped for that one. Tomic, I was saying I had Woods on here the last couple times. He refuses to – I always say IE sucks, go Dogs. He's refused to say go Dogs. I know you will not have a problem. So IU sucks, go Dogs.
Dogs.